Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning, June 27th. How are we doing this morning? Gorgeous summer weekend here on the east end of Long Island, and I'm hoping you're well and staying safe and active. And please support WLIW-FM, Long Island's only NPR station, by going to wliw.org/radiomatch or call 800-262-0717. That's 1-800-262-0717. What turns an 88.3 WLIW-FM listener into a WLIW-FM contributor? Well, the desire to make a difference and the understanding that every donation really does have an impact. Your contribution to 88.3 WLIW-FM helps support not just the station, but all of the stimulating programs that you tune into. That's the real power of your contribution. So please join us today and make a difference. You can go online at wliw.org/radiomatch or call 1-800-262-0717. Well, this morning we have a very, very special interview lined up for you. I had the honor of sitting down for 2 hours with the legendary Gary Player, winner of 9 major titles on the PGA Tour, 9 major titles on the Senior Tour, and winner of a career Grand Slam. 5 players have won the career Grand Slam. Gary Player is the only one of 5 who's an international player. He's 84 years young. He exercises regularly. He is very into nutrition and taking care of himself. In fact, when I was at his daughter's house where he was staying during the pandemic for a while, we were doing sit-ups and push-ups in her driveway, which was so much fun. So I will play one section of that long sit-down with Gary Player, and this particular segment. You know, Gary is very opinionated about his views on the pandemic, about, our economy in this country, and race relations. So you'll hear Gary Player talking about those subjects in this first segment of my interview with the great Gary Player. Then I'm going to play an interview I did with former Atlanta Braves pitching ace John Smoltz. He's a very good golfer, in fact. John Smoltz is a +2 handicap. And I think you'll enjoy hearing his take on the similarities and differences between the pitching motion and swinging a golf club, how he got into the game, and his rivalry with fellow pitchers Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux. They're all playing in the American Century Championship coming up at Lake Tahoe in July. The event won't have spectators this year, but they have decided to go on and put the event stage the event. So John Smoltz will be one of the celebrities playing in that. So I think you'll enjoy my discussion with the great pitching ace John Smoltz about golf. All right. Well, on the PGA Tour, the Travelers Championship is taking place in Cromwell, Connecticut, just outside of Hartford. It's a TV-only event, no spectators, and very little media on the premises. And the week started out with a number of players withdrawing from the tournament due to COVID-19. Cameron Champ tested positive. Ken Comboy, who caddies for Graham McDowell, and Ricky Elliott, who caddies for Brooks Koepka, they tested positive. So because their caddies tested positive, Graham McDowell and Brooks Koepka both withdrew from the tournament. Koepka had been tested twice and was not positive for COVID-19, but he withdrew anyway out of an abundance of caution since his caddy tested positive. And Brooks' brother, Chase Koepka, also withdrew, just out of an abundance of caution. Webb Simpson, who won the RBC Heritage Classic last Sunday on Hilton Head Island, he withdrew from the Travelers as well because he said he had a family member test positive for COVID-19. So they're all being extra careful, and they're all quarantining and heading back home. And so that got the Travelers Championship week off to a A hectic start after the withdrawals on Wednesday. PJ Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan called an impromptu press conference, and he basically laid out some more strict guidelines and testing protocols for future events. And a lot of players commented on it. Rory McIlroy, said that the PJ Tour is doing everything they can, you know, really to be safe. And apparently there's been some criticism and people, you know, are calling for a widespread shutdown, to which Rory McIlroy said, that's silly from my point of view. Monahan said that the tour's COVID-19 test results included only 7 positive tests among 2,757 administered to players, caddies, and other essential personnel. So when you look at the number of people tested, that's a pretty good number. Only 7 testing positive. And as soon as the positive tests come out, you know, these players and caddies are quarantined. Round 1 of the Travelers, Rory McIlroy shot an opening round 7 under 63 that put him in second place, 3 shots behind the first round leader, Mackenzie Hughes. And Hughes shot a career low 60 to take that first round lead. He is 29 years old. He's a Canadian. And he had the chance to shoot the 12th subpar round in PGA history, but his 40-foot birdie attempt on his final hole came up short. A couple years ago, Jim Furyk shot a 12-under 58 at the Travelers, the lowest score in a PGA Tour event. Phil Mickelson, he was paired with Rory McIlroy and was one of 6 players to shoot 64 in round 1. There are still serious questions as to whether the Ryder Cup will go on as scheduled, September 23rd to the 25th at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. This past Monday, the Guardian newspaper in the UK reported the event would be postponed until 2021. A Ryder Cup spokesman said there would be no comment on that report. The PGA of America announced its major championship, the PGA Championship, which is to be played in San Francisco on August 6th to 9th, will not have spectators. And if the Ryder Cup is indeed postponed to 2021, there will be some scheduling obstacles, including the Olympic Games were rescheduled for July 23rd to August 8th in Tokyo, and the PGA Tour's Presidents Cup is scheduled for September 30th through October 3rd in North Carolina. The United States Golf Association on Thursday announced the exemption criteria for its 144-player field, which is set to compete September 17th through the 20th at Wingfoot's West Course in Mamaroneck, New York. The news comes just more than a month since the USGA canceled all qualifying for its premier men's championship because of the coronavirus pandemic. So far, 84 players are qualified, including Phil Mickelson, who benefited from a decision to expand the official world golf ranking cutoff from the top 60 players to the top 70. Now, Mickelson was ranked number 61 by the selected cutoff date, which was March 15th. So the U.S. Open is the only major championship that Mickelson, who just turned 50 years old, hasn't won. He's finished runner-up 6 times in the event, most famously in 2006 at Wingfoot, when he led by 1 shot on the 72nd hole but made double bogey to lose by 1. So anyway, by the fact that the world ranking cutoff now will be the top 70 players, Phil Mickelson will get in to the U.S. Open at Wingfoot in September. The USGA will also exempt the top 2 finishers in non-major PGA Tour events, beginning with the Memorial Tournament and ending with the Wyndham Championship. And the top 3 finishers will be taken from the PGA Championship on August 6th to the 9th at TPC Harding Park. And in Europe, the top 5 in aggregate points from the European Tour's 5 event, UK Swing, will also receive spots. So a lot of changes as, there's just fewer events this year, and everybody's trying to make changes so that these major championships will be possible to play. And who will qualify for them? All those questions. In other news, Jack Nicklaus's grandson is feeling better after suffering a heart attack and needing emergency surgery last month. According to a Palm Beach Post report, Nick O'Leary, who is a five-year NFL veteran and plays tight end for the Las Vegas Raiders, he was playing pickleball with his brother in Jupiter, Florida, where he lives, when he felt pain in his chest. Doctors diagnosed O'Leary with a heart attack, and the 27-year-old underwent an angioplasty on May 19th to clear 100% blockage in his heart. Wow, he's only 27 years old. He's 6'3", 250 pounds, and he anticipates being able to return to football next year. He's on blood thinners and can't play this year, but he's hoping to get back into the NFL next year. He was also a member of Florida State's 2013 NCAA championship football team. Former Wimbledon champion Goran Ivanišević, who coaches Novak Djokovic, said he has tested positive for the coronavirus. Goran Ivanišević attended the event, the Adria Tour, a charity event hosted by Novak Djokovic, and Djokovic and his wife have said they have the virus, as well as Grigor Dimitrov, Borna Koric, and Viktor Triacci. All said they tested positive and have the virus. Djokovic has won 17 Grand Slam titles and previously was quoted as saying he is against taking a vaccine for the virus, even if it became mandatory to travel. Well, now he has the virus. So, boy, a lot of those guys from that tournament, you know, tested positive. Venus Williams will play World Team Tennis, which starts in July. World Team Tennis will have a three-week season, and all the matches will be played at the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia. The seven-time Grand Slam champion recently turned 40 years old, Venus Williams. Up to 500 spectators will be allowed to attend each match at this new temporary venue, the Greenbrier Resort for World Team Tennis. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and you'll hear my interview with the great Gary Player, a small portion of my interview. I sat down with him for 2 hours. So this would be the first segment with Gary Player. And then you'll also hear an interview I did with pitching ace John Smoltz, who is a +2 handicap golfer. Sports Interview with Ann Lagore is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course and timeless pieces for men and women. Dune, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, P-E-A-K, vision.com. I'm here with the legendary Gary Player, winner of 9 major titles, 9 senior major titles, 165 tournaments around the world on 6 continents, over 7 decades, and the only non-American to complete a career Grand Slam. Gary, it is a pleasure to talk with you.
Nice to be talking to you, Anne. I look forward to this.
And thank you so much for inviting us in your daughter's home. Amanda's so nice to have us here.
Well, we're very lucky. I mean, my heart goes out to those people that have had not very enjoyable places to stay during this lockdown and people that have lost family and have people that have been affected by this. But we've been very fortunate because we have this forest right adjoining her property. She has a gymnasium and my next door neighbor has a one of these simulators that you could hit balls into. But now that the golf courses are open, which I think is the right thing to do because you're out in the fresh air, I have a very different view about things like this. I believe that people that are my age, 84, if you're old and you're sickly, stay at home. I believe if you have no immune system or you're weak, stay at home. But I think the rest of us have got to get out and work. Otherwise, what's going to happen to the economy? The greatest country in the world, the United States of America, 26 million people plus minus without work. I was poor. I know what it's like to come home and not have food on the table and not to have a car and not to have air conditioning and not to have sufficient blankets. I've experienced all that as a kid. I suffered dreadfully when I was a kid. My mother died when I was 9. My brother went to war to fight with the Americans for freedom, which we'll discuss later. And my brother-in-law got killed, my future brother-in-law got killed in the war from South Africa at 17. And so I know what it is to struggle. And so, but you've got to get out and start working. I mean, how many people are dying of car accidents, flu, cancer, diabetes, et cetera, every day?
Right. People are afraid to go to the hospital.
They've had pandemics throughout time. The one with smallpox and the different flus of the world, one of them affected 50 million people died. 500 million had it happen to them. So this is a time we live in, but you can't bring the world to a stop. And that's what I believe in. Now, obviously, with the media as it is today, you'll have people criticize you. You know, it's like if you're president of the United States, this phenomenal country, the day you win, 49% of people don't like you from tomorrow onwards. It's a very tough, we live in a very tough time now with this media, because people are very vociferous and can be very mean. They'll never say, well, that's his opinion. And we're supposed to be living in a time of freedom when you can have your say and have your opinion, but that's not so. If you took a world map and looked at the places where freedom does not exist, it's increasing. Even in America, freedom is dying. If you look at somebody, if they say something that is not correct in the public, if it's politically correct, it's all right. But a man might have his opinion. He loses his job. Where's that freedom we're talking about? I'll give you an example with the golf. Vijay Singh was against Annika Sorenstam playing at Fort Worth in a men's tournament. I was in favor of it. The press were in favor of it. The members were in favor of it. And the galleries were in favor. So to me, that's the important thing. Not me as a professional, what my opinion is. But Vijay Singh had his opinion. He didn't think it was correct. And that's fine. I respect that. He went through living hell for a year because of that. Where's the freedom we boast about?
What about freedom of speech? Everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
But does freedom of speech exist? If you go to a university today and you're a conservative and you want to give your opinion, they shout you down. They don't give you a chance to talk. This is students that are supposed to be learning and speaking out and being vociferous about freedom. They've got to practice it themselves.
What about all the social and racial unrest in our country going on right
so
now?
Sad.
I mean, you have the George Floyd murder. You have peaceful protests. You have violent protests. You have the looting. You have the rioting. It's just so disturbing.
You know, for me, it's very sad because this is such a great country. And I've seen all kinds of things happen. I remember when I came to America in 1957. I was playing in Los Angeles, and Charlie Sifford was not allowed to play in the tournament. And I really was shocked because we had apartheid in South Africa. I didn't know you had it in America when I came here, a young man. And anyway, I became good friends with him. I tried to get the PGA to help. I went to his golf club in Cleveland, Ohio, and played. And he appreciated that. And when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame, now here's a black man asking a white South African who was a practicing apartheid at that time to induct him into the Hall of Fame. What an honor. You know how that made me feel? That made me feel that God is in my heart and that I cared about people. And then Lee Elder, I wanted him to come to South Africa, and I went to my prime minister at that time and I said, I'd like to invite a black golfer. Isn't it sad I had to get permission in that apartheid era? And I played golf with that prime minister, so I knew him well, so I could go and see him face to face. And I said, I'd like to bring a black golfer, Lee Elder, to America. He was under great strain here not to go. And I was called a traitor in South Africa because I invited a black golfer to play in our PGA, one of our most important tournaments. The prime minister said, go ahead, which I'm so thankful for. And Lee Elder came out and did an impeccably good job. And we did other venues. And I admire that so much. So I've had so many experiences with sponsoring black tournaments in South Africa. Caddy tournament, the leader caddied for me in Britain. I had South African black caddies in apartheid. I took them to England, sponsored them to America. I was president of our PGA. I resigned because they wouldn't put two black guys on the committee. So I've done a lot of things like that. And unfortunately, it's not recognized in my country. And that's why I really appreciated what Donald Trump giving me this Medal of Freedom, because he's done his homework. He just didn't give me that award. of which something that I will be eternally grateful for. I go on my hands and knees every day and say, United States of America, to be given the Medal of Freedom, which I know what I've tried to have in my heart, means so much to me, more than all the trophies I won through my golfing prowess.
Congratulations, by the way. You and Annika Sorenstam?
Yes, who's a dear lady and has been fantastic. I think she's definitely the best lady golfer that ever lived. I mean, she is a machine. Every time I play with her, she's unbelievable. And I know she has goodness in her heart. And so I'm looking forward to receiving this medal.
That's quite an honor. Getting back to what you were saying about the racial unrest, I know you contributed to kind of breaking apartheid in sport in South Africa with sponsoring, you know, black mm-hmm. players and bringing all these players mm-hmm. to South Africa and doing what you were doing. But I know it was tough for you for a long time in your early days because you were being harassed on golf courses over here.
Big time. They wanted to kill me every day for 2 years. In fact, I lost the PGA to Raymond Floyd in Dayton, Ohio. They threw telephone books in my back, on the top of my backswing. They threw ice in my eyes. They charged me out of the greens. I was playing with Nicklaus. They came running out of this bank, skidded on the greens and tore up the greens. They threw balls between my legs when I was getting ready to putt. They screamed on my backswing. This was being done against apartheid in South Africa. So who could they get? Who was the most prominent person in South Africa at that time? It was Mandela was the most prominent, but he was in jail. But I was out, and so they could get to South Africa by demonstrating against me and trying to hurt me that way. So, yes, we have those things, but adversity is the greatest gift bestowed upon anybody. I did not hate Americans because of that. I lost the PGA by one shot. Think about that. With all that going, I lost by one shot.
So you could have had 10 major titles.
No, but there are no ifs and ands, but I know I feel in my heart I won 10 majors. Yeah. I have no bitterness about that. I accept that as a challenge. That's part of a challenge in life. And I don't say it's 10, and a lot of people say, oh, it's 90% what happens to me, I'm so unlucky. No, I say it's 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. So we've got to be tough. Too many people go into states of depression because they have adversity. Nobody can escape adversity. Nobody in the world. Sometime or other before you die, and if you don't get it now, you'll get it in the next world. But you will have adversity.
What was it like in the early days with Charlie Sifford and Lee Alder on tour? What are your memories of that?
Well, they very soon after that, they started playing the tour, and they did a great job going around the country. And I've always said that was fantastic. And I've always said that the sport golf does more for America than any other sport because there's a golf tournament every week of the year other than Christmas and New Year and special holidays. So you have American players playing around the world every week of the year. And there are a billion people that see these tournaments. So these are wonderful ambassadors you have. The Arnold Palmers and the Jack Nicklauses, the Lee Trevinos and the Tom Watsons and Ben Hogans and Sam Sneeds and Bobby Jones. I can go through a host of lists. Raymond Floyd was a phenomenal competitor. I can go through all these guys. They've done a wonderful job for this country and have donated. You know that golf has donated over $3 billion to charity, more than any other two sports put together. So these golfers are doing a wonderful job. But just to come back to, I didn't quite answer your question, for me to see a man suffocated and killed like that, it makes my heart bleed to see that. And those five people, if there were four or five, have got to be punished. It's not for me to decide what the punishment is. And I love to see people demonstrate about things. This is the freedom. But what breaks my heart when I see a man standing in front of his store trying to protect it and a man throws a rock against his head, this man will probably, in all probability, be affected for the rest of his life trying to protect his property, and people running out of the stores with clothes and burning the stores and putting the police vans on fire and all the things that they're doing. I mean, what does that do for your cause? That doesn't do much for your cause. You've had a lot of wonderful people fight for, black people fight for their cause. And you think of Martin Luther King, he would not like that.
Right.
And Mandela didn't like that because I spent a lot of time with Mandela, President Mandela, who I loved and adored and put him in my five most important people I've ever met and been with. And he had love in his heart. He had what we call in South Africa, Ubuntu. bring people together. And he had no revenge and he had no hatred. He believed in communication. And the people, you see, the problem with America, and there's nobody that loves this country more than I do. Not any American.
I know, I appreciate that in you. You're so patriotic. You love the USA.
But I don't think Americans realize, generally speaking, how lucky they are to live in this country.
Right.
When you go to the places I've been and you see the socialism that's been practiced and communism, that's their systems and that's fine for them. I respect their opinion, but not for me. You see, Winston Churchill, my great hero of all time, said, socialism, there are only two places in the world it works, where it's taking place. One is in heaven, where they don't need it, and the other is in hell, where they practice it every day. Now, you know, I hear politicians talking about, you know, when we win, we will have a socialistic theme in our future country. Well, every country, I'd like to take these students at universities and these people, I'd like to take them to some countries that I've been to, having traveled more miles than any human being ever. I'd like to take them there and let them see what it's like. And there's no freedom. Just to let them understand it. You see, you cherish freedom like I do when you were deprived of it. Now, I lived in South Africa and I had a white man's privilege, so to speak, as compared to the black people. But I still didn't have entire freedom. And so I understand what is to be denied, and I've seen this happen around the world. And I tell you, the young students of this America, of America, are very naive. First of all, what perturbs me about them, they're going to be the future. The youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity. Now, all these students at these universities in America, right across the board, 90% generally are drinking, smoking, or on weed of something. Now, these are the future leaders. Now, that should be stopped. But it's not. I have a lot of grandchildren that are at universities, so I'm not sucking this out of the air. They come home and tell me what's happening.
Right, 22 grandchildren?
22 grandchildren. 15 American grandchildren and 7 South African. And I just shudder when I hear that, because I appreciate having traveled the world, and these students have no idea about socialism and apartheid. They have no idea. They've read about it, but they've never experienced it. And I don't know how you get this message through to these people of America. Yes, they're people that are struggling badly, and my heart bleeds for them. But they don't struggle like they do in a lot of other countries where they live in absolute hell.
Yes, they have no context.
No context.
Because the education process, you've traveled all over, you've seen it.
Yeah.
You've lived 84 years young, Gary.
Yes.
You've seen a lot.
I've seen so much, and I've been around all kinds of people. I've dined and played golf and been in the White House for your wonderful president. I love every one of your presidents. Everyone. They might not agree with their policies, but I've loved everyone.
You respect the time.
I have respect. And for the president, because it's the number one position in the world. And I think Americans right now, with their fighting going on amongst themselves, are doing America harm. The rest of the world are looking at it and saying, look at these people. They're fighting with themselves.
You know, I agree.
And also, all these things that are going on television now, but people of the rest of the world are watching it, and they're now coming back at America very strong in their articles. And so, yes, I love demonstrations. I love it. And I love people to be active and to do something
peaceful, and
bring justice.
Peaceful demonstrations.
But it must be peaceful. You can't be ruining other people's properties who've worked all their lives to have a store or to have something.
Sports Interview with Ann Legore is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course and timeless pieces for men and women. Dune, D-U-N-E, jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses. Zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game. Peak Vision, P-E-A-K, vision.com. It's my pleasure to say hello to John Smoltz, 8-time All-Star with the Atlanta Braves, a career that began in 1988 and continued through 2009, World Series champion in 1995, and Cy Young Award winner in 1996. But we're going to talk golf. Hey, John, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So you've been playing golf a long time because I've been following your golf career as long as I've been following your baseball career. Talk about how you first got into the sport.
Yeah, I never played golf growing up. I grew up in Michigan, basketball, baseball, football. I didn't really appreciate the sport. And then I got to baseball and had a bunch of time on my hands as a starting pitcher. It was like, what am I going to do every 4 days, you know, in between starts? So I picked up golf and fishing. Fell in love with both, but golf became the passion that really allowed me to have competitiveness. You're out, you know, you're basically out in Mother Nature taking on the golf course. And I learned fairly quickly and never really taken a lesson. I never really shot in the 90s when I first started. And I just became obsessed with it. And golf has been something I'm going to play well into my 80s if I live that long.
So you never shot into the 90s? You just went into the 80s or?
Yeah, I don't remember, you know, much of high scores. You know, I'm sure I might have in the very beginning had a round or two close to that. But the game with pitching and hand-eye coordination and everything that, you know, I try to do mechanically for pitching, there's a lot of similarities, and I picked it up fairly quickly. You know, length wasn't a problem when I was playing baseball. That was one of the strengths. It started to, you know, your game gets better as your short game gets better.
So what are the similarities between pitching and golf? Because it seems like there are a lot of pitchers out there that, you know, take to golf pretty easily and are good players.
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing is sight-oriented commitment. You know, you got to look and channel a shot, be committed on what you're doing. From the mental standpoint, there's a lot of similarities from a pitcher's perspective. The mechanics are a little bit different. You don't want to slide, obviously, in your golf swing. You slide into your you know, you stay behind the ball when you're throwing a pitch. You want to stay behind the ball when you're obviously, you know, hitting a golf shot. So there's some things that lend me to more of a problem in the golf swing, but I've learned how to kind of stay over the ball and turn and try not to slide into the shot.
So what would you say is more difficult, hitting a stationary ball or hitting, you know, 90-mile fastball?
Well, you know, they're both difficult, but to hit a golf ball straight is much more difficult than it is to try to hit a ball that's moving. Both have its challenges, and certainly a stationary ball would seem like it's easier to do, but it's much more difficult to control. So, you know, I've learned a lot about the game of golf, and the pressure and anxiety that comes along with it creates, you know, can create negative scenarios for not executing a good shot. And so from that standpoint, you know, golf has definitely got a lot more room for error than a team sport where they can pick you up in a team sport.
Interesting. Plus, you have more time in golf to let bad thoughts get between the ears, I guess, right?
No doubt. You know, that's the biggest thing in a challenged match of a tournament. That's where I have struggled. I like to play fast. I like to be in rhythm. And you can get out of rhythm quickly in a tournament because it takes for a long time in between shots. You have a lot of thinking to do, and that's not necessarily a great thing.
So how do you get rid of those bad thoughts? I mean, can you take anything from your baseball career to golf to, you know, from a psychological standpoint?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. You mentally learn when you fail. So after you fail, you change your mental approach. And if there's any kind of nerves, there's a scenario that comes in to play that doesn't allow you to be free. And when you're not free, you better find ways to get a little more freed up when you're trying to execute a shot under the gun. Same thing with baseball. I was always used to it. It was what I've practiced and I was known for. So that wasn't an issue of nerves. Golf became more an issue of nerves when you do something outside your comfort zone. And playing tournament golf is so far different than playing casual golf. It's night and day.
Sure. You have to be so match tough, both physically and mentally, when you're playing in those tournaments. And the Lake Tahoe event, the American Century Championship, will take place July 8th. Through the 12th at the Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course. There will not be spectators this year. And how do you think that's going to affect play?
Well, it'll be different because you definitely feed off the emotion of the fans, and they get pretty loud on a couple holes. And, you know, that's what makes it exciting. But I think the fact that we're playing and the fact that we can get out and get some things more I don't know, closer to normal. We'll give somebody, you know, give people to something to watch, and obviously gives us the opportunity to compete in a great event.
So Tony Romo, he's won it the last 2 years. What makes Tony Romo such a good golfer?
Oh, he's got a great game. He hits it long. There's really not many weaknesses he has. And he's been under the gun in a lot of amateur championships. And he's learned how to play in a couple of PGA events, which really help you navigate this event, because if you can play in a PGA event, it's a little bit, you know, this is a little easier from a tension standpoint. So, you know, he's definitely got the game to win it multiple times, which he has. And, you know, hopefully, I just want to get in the same group with him and see what I can do.
And you've been playing for, what, 11 years in this championship?
The event is something that I mark down every chance I can. I had to miss it 1 year for the Hall of Fame. There was a scheduling conflict. But for the most part, this has been a must-do, and can't wait to do it.
And Mark Mulder, talking about pitchers who play great golf, he dominated the event for a couple years, right?
Yeah, he hits it. I mean, you know, this is the thing, that these younger guys hit it a ton, and I've learned to not try to stay up with them anymore. Being 53, it's a little bit different, but they Mark's got the game. This golf course for him suits his eyes. He dominates the par fives, and that's where the scoring is. You got to dominate the par fives, otherwise you're falling behind big time.
Right, so you don't think you have as much distance, but how's your short game?
It's getting better. It's getting better when I can stay away from the corners, which I like to do when there's a pitcher. I don't like the corners out here because I lip out a lot when you're on the corners. So I'm trying to square it up with the putter a little bit better.
Were you around when Stephon Curry and his caddy jumped into Lake Tahoe? I guess he lost a bet.
Yeah, they've got a nice little family bet going on there. And he can play. There's a lot of guys that can play, and it should be a fun leaderboard come Sunday.
I mean, when you look at this field, you know, you have just an eclectic array of stars from baseball, basketball, football, tennis. You have Marcus Allen, Jerome Bettis, Roger Clemens, Stephon Curry, Marty Fish from tennis, and your buddies from the Braves, Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux, your former teammates. You know, and they, you talk about pressure. Everybody I just mentioned have withstood the pressure of playing in a Super Bowl, a World Series, Wimbledon, NBA Finals. Yet, you know, you're still talking about the pressure of competition as being really extreme, right?
Yeah, it's totally different, because the biggest thing here is everyone else in their own sport is in their comfort zone. This is outside their comfort zone. And so you start thinking differently. And when you think differently, you're going to react differently. So once you get it under your belt a few times, first-time goers have a hard time, you know, with the tournament and the idea, A, it's on TV, B, a lot of people are going to see the shot. So it's an exciting but nervous type feeling that you just can't experience until you go through it.
So I'm sure people want to ask you this all the time. Who's better, you, Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux? And how much of a rivalry is there in golf amongst you guys?
Well, I've been better my whole career than them, but they're all trying. Glavine has been trying, taking a ton of lessons. He just wants to beat me once, and he came real close a couple times. So that's really my built-in pressure. I can't afford to lose to those guys, because if I do, I'll never hear the end of it.
Do you play a lot against each other, or just in these tournaments, these celebrity tournaments?
Yeah, we used to during, you know, our career, and then we usually are paired together, and then that's where it ends, because then they go by score after that.
How about Saberhagen? He's a good player, right? Brett Saberhagen.
They are. A lot of baseball players, a lot of pitchers usually have the opportunity to play. And they, you know, he's been on the leaderboard before. And again, the goal here is you got to make a lot of birdies. And one day you can get it going. The next day, those Poana greens, they get in your head. So it's a matter of trying to put the ball in the hole. I don't see many lip in.
So talk a little bit about, you know, I mean, the fact that you were allowed to bring your clubs, you know, when you were playing with the Braves. But, you know, I remember guys telling me that, you know, some clubs weren't allowed to, some managers said, no way, you're not bringing your clubs.
Yeah, I wouldn't play for any of those teams either. When free agency, that was a rule. I wasn't signing no matter how much money they gave me. And that's why I stayed in Atlanta. And that's why Bobby knew and understood what we needed to keep ourselves fresh and to enjoy the run. It kept us fresh. We played a lot, probably an extra 3 years because of golf. We all talk about that.
Interesting. Well, good for you. And what about your thoughts on the ongoing talks, John, between the players' union and the owners? Do you think there's going to be any kind of baseball season this year?
I do. I think they're going to, it's all posturing. It's usually when it comes out in the press, it's not maybe as totally as accurate as each side, I'm sure, uses the press to try to get pressure on the other side and everything that usually happens. So I'm confident they're going to work it out. It's a shame it hasn't worked out so far, but I still believe they're going to work it out.
So you do think there's going to be some kind of season this
Yes.
year?
Yes. I'm definitely waiting to see what they come up with because my job depends on it. I broadcast for Fox and MLB Network, so I'm still doing all the games of the week and then the postseason and World Series.
And it may take a little bit away from your practice, though, on the golf course if you have
For
to
sure.
work.
Yeah, I'm always challenged to try and figure out how I can squeeze in golf amongst the games that I do.
What's your handicap these days?
Plus two.
Oh, wow. And do you feel that you can get better as you get older? I know you said you're losing a little distance off the tee, but a lot of times from a mental standpoint and from a maybe course management standpoint, game management standpoint, you may be, as you get older, you get wiser as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm definitely finding that that's a part of the game that can definitely improve and learning how to manage your game and where your strengths are and when to go for things and when not to. So I'm definitely learning every time I come out and play, but the most I learn is in a tournament.
Do you work with any instructors at this point, or is it
I
pretty much
don't.
all
I don't. I
self-taught?
just don't want to get too mechanical. I probably should have done that a while ago, but at this point, with my physical limitations and some of the surgeries I've had, some of the things I need to do, I can't. So it's kind of like fighting Mother Nature in ways that I just can't do certain things. So I have to learn how to swing around some of my elements.
And where would you love to play golf where you haven't perhaps played yet?
I've gotten a chance. Scotland is the trip we had this year, but it got canceled. So
Mm.
I'm really looking forward to playing over there. I've heard nothing but great things about playing golf over there, and I'm really, really can't wait to do it.
Well, good for you. I love playing golf in Scotland. I love Irish golf too, and hopefully we can get back there and play some golf there. Well, good luck in this tournament,
Thank you.
and I hope you do beat your buddies Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux.
I
I
hope
love
so
that
too. I
rivalry.
really
I
do.
think it's a lot of fun with you guys.
Definitely.
Well, continued success on and off the course, John. Thanks for being
All
on the
right. Thank you
show.
very much.
My thanks to the great Gary Player. You heard one segment of my long sit down with the legendary Gary Player. And my thanks to pitching ace, just enthusiastic golfer, John Smoltz. My thanks to Kyle Lynch in the studio. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Be well, be safe, stay active. And let me tell you that 88.3 WLIW FM is really all about you and your support. You make the rich diversity of programming happen on WLIW FM. Simply stated, we cannot do what we do without the support of our listeners. So go online, if you would, to wliw.org/radiomatch or call 800-262-0717 to make your gift. That's wliw.org/radiomatch or call 1-800-262-0717. Have a wonderful day, everybody. A safe weekend. I will talk to you next Saturday morning from 7 to 8 right here on Sports Interview with Ann Liguori.